This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
And we're back on The Usual Suspects, featuring The Usual Substitutes. Myself, Jermaine Every, Mr. Craig Conson, and Nick Sciarra is the only mainstay holdover that we have here from the show. So we've been having a very good discussion here on Top 5 MCs. We got a couple of callers on the board. We want to get you guys in real quick and just give us your top five, starting with Warren. Warren, give us your top five.
Hello?
Warren, hey, you're Warren. On air. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, subs? I'm not going to take too much time. I don't really have a top five. I just wanted to pick y'all's brain to see where y'all have Method Man ranked in all this.
Certainly top 20, probably top 15.
Yeah, he's definitely in that, like I was saying before, like that 12 to 20 or so range, but not just cracking my top 10.
Yep.
All right, that's a bet. Appreciate it, fellas.
Thank
you. All right, man. Next up, Curtis. Curtis, give us your top five, man.
How y'all boys doing this afternoon, man?
Doing well.
Cool. So when I, as far as my lyricists, not lyricists, actually rappers, because it's a big difference. I have Jay-Z, because like lyrically and delivery and composing songs, putting them together is what separates a great rapper as opposed from a lyricist. So that's why the Big L's don't make this list.
Fair enough.
Then I have Rakim. But it was a toss-up with him and Big Daddy Kane. But Big Daddy Kane was a battle rapper more than anything. Then I have Outkast as a unit because I've never seen them make a great album without each other. So I can't put Andre up there because I don't know if he can compose an album by himself without Andre, without Big Boy.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Speaker Box and Love Below were essentially solo albums.
Right.
They definitely had their own sounds mm-hmm. for each of theirs. Big Boys with Speaker Box, obviously. Right. That means Andre's was Love Below. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. But if you want to say he doesn't have the catalog of solo stuff, only one album,
I can
respect that. It's reasonable. I get what you're saying. You're good.
But Love Below was not a rap album. Like, let's be honest.
That's true.
It was a musical album.
That's fair, too. That's reasonable.
You know? That's all I'm saying. So, like, Outkast is a unit. The synergy they have, I mean, I look at them as one. So that's my number three. I may be breaking the rules right there. But
A little bit, but we'll allow it.
Yeah. And then I got Eminem and Tupac. And like I said, the reason being for my list is because you have to put it all together. And at the end of the day, your top five should change the game in some way, form, or fashion. Period.
Okay.
I think that's reasonable.
We'll allow it.
I think that's a reasonable primary criterion for doing it. I think all of our top fives managed to hit that criteria that they all changed the game in some way.
In some way, shape, or form, everybody's top five did something to add to bring to the table. Yep.
All right, we got two more. Daniel, you're on with The Usual Substitutes. Give us your top five. Sorry to do this to you. We've let everyone else say their piece. Don't have the time for all the explanations. Let's just hear the top five, 5-1. What you got?
Okay, top five. Number five, starting off, he doesn't get too much recognition because he never blew up. But I personally have South Park Mexican as top five. This dude lyrically was crazy. His wordplay and his storytelling. Four, Andre 3000.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again later.
Sorry, Daniel. South Park Mexican hits your top five.
He don't top my top 500.
Yeah, I'm not endorsing South Park Mexican.
No, we had to dump you. Sorry.
It took one, and it's what? We're almost 2 hours and 15 minutes. 2 hours and 10 minutes.
We expected to have to do that with Mexican food, too, and we never did. We expected people to call him with Taco Bell and all that stuff. But I'm sorry, Daniel. I heard Andre at number four.
And even if you're going to make the argument, put his history behind, just look at him as a rapper, I still wouldn't put him in.
No,
he's not even close.
No. Sorry. Nope.
It's closing time for that call. We got it. No more. We got one more on the line. Maul.
He's probably afraid now.
Top five. No.
I'm not afraid, but I know I don't have long. So five, I will say Big Boy. Big Boy was actually better than Andre. I'm gonna be the first one to admit it. Four, I would say Fabulous. People sleeps on Fab a lot. Like, Fab got lyrics, man. And he changed the game. Four, Jadakiss. I mean three, I'm sorry. Three, Jadakiss. Two, I would say Pac. And one, I got to go with Big, man. I love Big.
I'm going to tell you right now, I understand your list, except for Big Boy. You almost got popped with some closing time music for Big Boy ahead of Andre 3000. In your top five, you can make a case album. Top five.
He wouldn't have got popped for me for saying Big Boy over Andre, but he would have got popped for saying Fabulous changed the game.
That almost got you dropped. Look, you got your five in. You just skirted in, but and Big Boy had his last album was very, very, very good. No doubt he is nowhere near the rapper Andre 3000 is. Nowhere near. Not even close. I realize I'm not going to convince you otherwise. There is nothing you can say to say Big Boy is the better of the duo to convince me of that. Can't be done.
He just must be a big fan of Big Boy.
And that's fine. Hey, I wouldn't say that either. It's all subjective. He didn't quite get dumped. It was close, though. Fabulous was a more egregious at four than Big Boy was at five.
Fabulous was a guy that I felt like benefit of that era, where you could still benefit and still kind of be relevant despite not making that hits. Like, you know what I mean? Like, instead of being a one hit wonder, he had like, you know, he had a few songs that were pretty good, and he kind of dropped off in terms of hit singles, but he could still stay afloat. Like, he was in that last era, like late 90s, early 2000s, where you could still kind of get away with that.
He misspelled his name.
So
he was Fabulous, not yeah. Fabulous.
But, okay.
Put a bow on it. Let's put a bow on it, and let's
We respect everybody's opinions
except for South Park Mexican. Sorry,
for South Park Mexican.
I cannot
get the hell out of here.
I cannot even come close to co-signing that. Can't do it.
Like, as soon as he says South Park Mexican, we had to give Nick the signal. I'm sorry, bro, but that was awful.
I hate to do that to any of the loyal listeners here.
That's almost like saying David Carr is one of the top 10 quarterbacks in NFL history. It's just stupid. It's asinine. Anyway. Speaking of top quarterbacks, football in general, when I look at these playoffs and the way these things are playing out, we look at the AFC and we look at the NFC, okay? And you look at the AFC and you say Pittsburgh and New England most likely going to come out of the AFC. The dark horse I have there are the Chiefs. The Chiefs started off Blazing Saddles hot.
And then what happened?
They fell off a cliff.
I can't be on the Chiefs because of that cliff. Look, they were, after 4 weeks, the team, everyone was like, the Tom Brady era is over. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs, the overreaction was so strong and the fall off was so hard after that the Chiefs are done to me. They might get to the second round. They might win a playoff game. They're not getting by the Steelers or the Patriots. The only saving grace is I'm not looking at the bracket right now. I'm not looking at the seedings. If they were to play the Patriots in the second round, although the Patriots secondary has come around towards the end of the season, they're still susceptible. And Alex Smith is capable enough to do it. But what happened to the first 4 weeks Alex Smith that was just letting it go? We were like, he finally feels Pat Mahomes on his back. And maybe he needs to get going. So we started just saying, let's let it go.
Honestly, when you look at Alex Smith's season, his overall season,
it's been pretty good.
He's really had a good season. I don't really put it on him. I more or less put it on the defense, because the defense is what really let them down this season, in my opinion.
Kareem Hunt was nothing in the middle of the season.
Yeah, it seemed like nothing. He hit the rookie wall.
In week six.
He hit the rookie wall way early. Way early.
Yeah.
And normally you won't really see that. But it's just the main reason why I feel like the Chiefs could be a dark horse is because that offense, Andy Reid has found his rhythm again with that offense. And that defense has started to step up and realize, hey, you know what? We got some good pass rushers on the outside. We got some decent safety play. Even though Eric Berry's out for the season,
yep.
You know, the guys are filling in. It's next man up mentality up there, and they're really doing good. They're still getting some productivity out of Derek Johnson, who's like 87 years old and playing middle linebacker still. Ramique Wilson is one of the underrated guys on that defense because I love the way he can play, tackle, and cover coming out that linebacker spot. And to have Justin Houston, Dee Ford, and some of those other guys coming off the edge. Chris Jones on that defensive line. They replaced Dontari Poe very well with some of the guys that they have there. I just think that they're rounding into shape at the right time, playoff time. And that's why I have them as my best.
I get it. The Jaguars are a better version of the Chiefs right now.
Except the quarterback. And that's the key.
If the Jaguars were to get past the wild card round and play in the divisional round regardless. I think they're the 3 seed kind of regardless, so they would probably play the Steelers. It doesn't matter if it's the Patriots or the Steelers. Either of those defensive coordinators are going to game plan Blake Bortles out of any chance of winning that game. It's just going to happen.
Pretty much, yeah, because I don't see anything else happening with Blake Bortles is just a terrible quarterback, and if you get the right game plan to stop the run, you're going to force him to pass. He's going to throw you a pick.
Choose your words more wisely because you might get a gift of some trash cans if you use the right words from Jacksonville Jaguars fans and how you refer to Blake Bortles.
I would love it. That music means that Nick is trying to tell me to shut the hell up and go to break so we can pay some bills around here. So we'll be right back on The Usual Suspects on 97.5.
You know who it is.
It's Kareem Jackson, and you listen to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
And we are back on The Usual Suspects with The Usual Substitutes. Myself, Jermaine Every, and Mr. Craig Koshkin, along with the producer, Nick Sciarra. We're getting into NFL playoff talk right before the break, and I said that I felt like the Kansas City Chiefs were my dark horse in the AFC because you have the top two dogs, the Steelers and the Patriots, who are most likely going to come out of that conference. But if I see anybody outside of those two, I would go with the Chiefs. And we were kind of talking it out. And you had an interesting proposal to go through the playoff teams and kind of say who's a pretender and who's a contender in the AFC and NFC playoff picture.
Yep. I mean, the AFC is a lot less open.
Right.
The NFC is, man, whoever comes out of the NFC is going to be battle tested.
Definitely.
I'll just put it that way. And we may not even be able to get a whole segment out of this because, frankly, for you, there's 3 contenders in the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there's 2. And I don't think we even need to address it. Honestly, I think we should just go look at the NFC.
No, it's much more fun to look at the NFC because there's more of a debate there than there is in the AFC. Because Jacksonville, as long as Blake Bortles is quarterback, they don't have a shot. Baltimore and Tennessee, they're just not. They're struggling to even make the playoffs themselves, much less be a contender of anything. The only reason why I say the Chiefs is my dark horse, again, because of the defense and they're rounding into shape on offense. But when we look at the NFC, the top 5 teams in the NFC, that last playoff spot is still up for grabs, but they all have at least 11 wins.
Yep. And they all have really good strengths and not that big a weakness, honestly. Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, normally in most years you'd look at the NFC and say, oh, the Saints are in the playoffs, so they're going to give up a ton of points.
Right.
That defense not giving up as many points as they have in the past.
They may score 30, but they'll probably give up 40.
But that's not the case now.
That's not the case.
That's not what we're looking at now. The only team I think is a pretender, there's 2. Whoever gets that last spot between the Seahawks and the Falcons, neither of them are making the Super Bowl.
No,
not Seahawks are too beat up and a little dysfunctional at the moment. And Matt Ryan is not Matt Ryan of last year.
Matt Ryan isn't Matt Ryan because Kyle Shanahan is in San Francisco.
That's probably fair, too.
And I called that. That's one of the ones that I got right that I forgot to mention yesterday was that when Kyle Shanahan left, the offensive creativity was going to leave with him. I do see Carolina has a shot, but I would say if I was ranking them, I would put them next up on the list to be eliminated.
I think that's fair. I don't think that's fair, actually. I think it's the Eagles. The Eagles' defense has been exposed. Now, exposed might be a little strong. There have been some holes poked in that defense over the last 3 weeks.
It doesn't look as good as they have.
Obviously, Carson Wentz going down. Nick Foles is a quality backup. He's not Carson Wentz.
No, he's not.
And if you can count on one thing other than death and taxes, it is the city of Philadelphia being disappointed come February.
They used to be sort of like the factory of sadness, a little bit better version, because they would make you believe that they have a good team. They're going to get there. They're going to do it. And then they fall off.
Well, maybe you don't boo Santa Claus on Christmas Day, and then you
don't boo Wilbur Marshall getting hurt or Michael Irvin getting carted off on a stretcher.
Yeah, maybe you don't like do that. Those things. Karma happens. Look, I like the Eagles as they're constructed. I just don't see it with the way things have shaken out for them.
But the one saving grace that I do have in defense of the Eagles, just to play devil's advocate, is that Doug Peterson was there when they drafted Nick Foles. Nick Foles had his quote-unquote breakout season when Doug Peterson was there as an offensive coordinator. When Doug Peterson came back as head coach and Nick Foles did his little, foray away from the Eagles, he brought Nick Foles back to back up Carson Wentz because Nick Foles knows that system. He knows how to operate in that system. If that defense can find a way to shut down the run game and then you cut loose those pass rushers on the outside, which Brandon Graham has been doing a great job of coming off the edge, and the rookie that they have there, his name escapes me, he's been doing okay, Derek Barnett. He's been doing okay, but those corners are pretty decent. That defensive backfield is pretty decent. Those linebackers are okay. They do just enough to get the job done. But like you said, with them being exposed, it kind of leaves them wide open, especially not having Carson Wentz there.
I'm looking through the Eagles' schedule, and 13-2 is 13-2. You are what your record says you are. I'm not trying to say that they should have been 8-8 or something like that. That's not what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Their best win is at the Rams. That's a good win.
That's a damn strong win. And Carson Wentz got hurt at the end of that game.
Yep.
So Nick Foles had to come in and play the rest of that game.
And he played well. Their next best win, probably the Chiefs when the Chiefs were – I'm sorry, they lost to the Chiefs. I don't know where I got that. Maybe the Chargers. The Chargers hadn't gotten it together yet. They hadn't gotten that defense hadn't started playing as well as they're playing now.
They had to eke out that victory. I would say the next best win could be against the Panthers.
Probably the Panthers. That's probably the next best win.
I would say it would be the next best
win. Even still, three of their wins are quality wins.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the Redskins, not that good.
No.
The Giants, dumpster fire. The Cardinals, better than you would have thought they would have been, especially with David Johnson going down early.
Yeah.
But 49ers before Garoppolo, not a big win. Broncos, dumpster fire. Lose to the Seahawks. Bears, dumpster fire. Giants again. We've been over this. Raiders, not a very good football team. So you're 13-2. You're the one seed. You've earned it. Nothing against that. I just see with the way that defense has played the last 3 weeks, no Carson Wentz. They could be one and done. And so they're lucky they have a bye, or else they might be out on the first weekend of the NFL playoffs.
To me, that Eagles team right now is probably the most vulnerable one seed I've seen in the playoffs in quite some time. I can't recall seeing this vulnerable of a one seed.
The Rex Grossman-led Bears that went like 14-2 would be the first team that pops to mind, because Rex Grossman was their quarterback.
True indeed.
And they ended up making a Super Bowl, but I would have considered them very vulnerable despite that unreal Brian Urlacher-led defense.
That defense was so nasty.
Disgusting.
I mean, it was almost like you had a guy that was 6'3", about 245, 250, but he ran like a safety, covered sideline to sideline, and he played the key position in the middle in that Tampa 2 defense. That it was insane to watch them, because they could just sit in that Tampa 2 all game out of their base package and cover damn near any and everything.
Well, if you want to crown them, crown their ass. But that's where I'm going.
That was a classic.
So looking at it, it was against that Bears team that they blew the lead. It was that's why it works. Yep. But when you're looking at the playoffs, what is the most appetizing possible Super Bowl matchup you can come up with?
Let's see. I would have to say it would have to be New England on the AFC side, just because of the story, New England, the dynasty, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. Can they repeat? Can they come back to back after they haven't done it in almost 13 years doing it previously? On the opposite side of that, just looking at the teams who are currently in the playoff positions now, the next most appealing matchup against the Patriots, I would have to say, would either be the upstart LA Rams or the Saints.
See, to me, I'm with you on the Rams. That's my number two. I want to see that Vikings defense with time to prepare for Tom Brady.
You know what?
I want to see that Vikings
defense. Underrated. Case Keenum being as underrated as he is, undrafted rookie free agent, six-round draft pick Tom Brady, who's the king of the hill right now, that would be really good.
You heard it here first. Case Keenum is stealing the throne from Tom Brady in the playoffs this year. Hot takes.
Hot takes. Hot takes. Hot takes on the opposite side of this. We're going to get into some Rockets talk, because there's a little bit of a signing today that's kind of underrated that I kind of like for the Rockets. We'll be right back on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
And we're back. That's my lame ass attempt to try to do a Fred Fowler impersonation.
I was gonna say, was that you mocking Fred Fowler there?
I was not mocking. I was trying to impersonate Fred Fowler.
Right. That absolutely.
You're lucky. It's only
a form of flattery.
You're lucky. It's only 3:30, and he's not gonna get in until about 10 minutes before he goes on. So he didn't hear that.
Hey, he may be in his office over there in the palatial.
Might be in the car.
That's true.
Never know.
That's true.
You never know, man. You never know. True. Nah, Fred's a good dude.
Fred Fowler is everywhere.
He is.
I'm sincere.
He's a modern-day Renaissance man. Who do you know that does a bike ride, a jog, drinks beer, can, you know, give you lines and betting tips, and writes novels and can talk sports?
Not a lot.
Can play poker. Can do a lot of things.
You know what I'm saying? He's a modern-day Renaissance man.
He can do a lot of things.
He's got a very wide skill set.
Yes. Very delectable.
They would pass. Most, if this were baseball, he would be considered a 5-tool player.
Definitely a 5-tool player. Yeah, he'd be
he'd be like a 12-tool player, but they don't have 12 tools. And
well, we're back on The Usual Suspects. We are The Usual Substitutes. Jermaine Every, myself, and Mr. Craig Hoskin, along with Nick Sciarra. Rockets today brought in Gerald Green to kind of help out with the walking mash unit that they are as of right now going into the game tonight against the Celtics. Now, my only thing is I wish they would have done this a couple of days ago to kind of get him acclimated, and maybe he gets into the rotation tonight to help them with the Celtics, because the Celtics are a team that has a lot of guys on the wing, like a Jason Tatum, a Jaylen Brown, guys like that, that are kind of long and lanky. They're kind of difficult to deal with. And when you got guys like Briante Weber, who's like a buck 65 soaking wet with two bricks in his pocket, trying to defend guys like that, even if he's on to Kyrie Irving, Kyrie can post him up and take him in down low and score on him. You just need help on the wing, on the perimeter, defending teams like that. And I just wish that they would have done it earlier, but I'm glad they did bring him in at least.
It's a net nothing move for me. It's a warm body needed because there are not enough warm bodies on the bench right now.
Exactly.
That's what it is. And I saw a tweet earlier today when it was rumored to go down but wasn't quite done yet, I believe, where one of the Rockets insiders said something like, on pace guy, we'll have you know that Gerald Green is 100% from the field as a Rocket. He played one game and went 3-for-3 from the field. And you know how much Twitter loves on pace guy.
On pace guy is so, like, you know, I did some goofy stuff about on pace guy at one point with the Astros and at one point in the postseason, they had scored like 5 runs in the first inning or something like that, and said they're on pace to score 45 runs this game or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, on pace guys almost always like that stupid statistician guy who like just takes a stat, multiplies it, extrapolates it out over the course of a season or a game or whatever it is, and just gives you this odd number. But honestly, if they had signed anybody, I wish they had signed another big, because you're going to rely on Nene,
yeah,
Tariq Black, and putting PJ Tucker at the 5, you know, for the next couple of games or however many games it is until Capella comes back. And who's to say that he's going to come back from a fractured orbital bone and be ready to play 30-plus minutes or so a night?
I think that's reasonable. He's going to have the mask on, I would assume, when he comes back, which that'll be an interesting look for Clint Capella.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing is, you know, is that he finally, you know, he's over the hump in terms of stamina.
Like, yes.
They were always so afraid of keeping him on the floor, and they would always pull him out. It kind of sucks because that probably puts a little bit of a speed bump in all the progress that he's made.
He's going to lose some of that. But
he's young, and he should be able to overcome.
But an orbital bone is not going to keep him from working out.
It shouldn't.
While he's waiting to come back.
Shouldn't.
It's just,
he could be on the treadmill.
Can he put himself in a game and face the physicality of 30 minutes on the floor with the other bigs of the NBA? It's not about his stamina. So he could still be working on his stamina during this time.
Right.
And but it's still not going to be the same as game shape.
Game speed and going out and running 6 miles is not the same thing.
Game shape is totally different. And to me, the progress that, like Nick said, the progress that he did make with his stamina, you know, being out for a week or so, I wonder how much of a monkey wrench that's going to throw into those plans. And then you got that mask on. You're trying to get acclimated to breathing with the mask, playing with the mask, you know, contact around the mask.
I think he'll be fine. I get the hand-wringing and worry about it, because there have been players who have had to wear the mask who said, I can't play with this thing. It's not for me. What you ask Clint Capella to do is not so intensive that it should, unless it's messing with his actual vision, it shouldn't screw anything up for his skill set.
Right. And hopefully they'll carry a couple of different masks. Like Kyrie, he played with the black one when he first got hurt earlier this season. He said he couldn't play with that one. He went to the clear one. The clear one was much better. Then there are some guys who can't play with the mask at all, and they just take it off and risk that chance. Then you get the anomaly of like a Rip Hamilton, who just plays with it for the rest of his career because he just felt like it helped him. It was like Linus's blanket or something.
Yeah.
You know, but I just hope that whatever it is, he gets acclimated to it quickly. He comes back, because missing that presence down in the post, to me, is one of the biggest reasons why they've gone on this slide that they've gone on, losing these 3 games.
Oh, for sure. Chris Paul's a big loss in the grand scheme of things.
It's a huge loss.
But not the same as just you're in your half-court set and trying to get into your – James Harden is completely capable of facilitating the offense as is.
Sure.
But you take Clint Capella out and – the offense can't be facilitated in the same way with Nene. It just can't.
No, because you don't have that pick-and-roll threat with James Harden in that high-screen, you know, pick-and-roll game that he and Capella play so well. But not just that, but teams have fearlessly gone to the basket in these last 3 games without fear of any kind of repercussion.
Yep.
No shot blocker. There's no presence down there. Even when Nene is down there playing defense in the low post, they're not scared to go at him. Nobody's scared. The defense sacks off of him because they're not afraid of him in a pick and roll situation. So you're getting guys that get double teamed, and you get closeouts on those 3-point shooters much more effectively when you don't have that threat down low on both ends of the court.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And I will say this. I'm the guy who, before this last offseason, has given Daryl Morey a lot of flack and think his reputation has been overinflated because of one trade that was kind of obvious to make for James Harden.
I mean,
someone was going to get him for pennies on the dollar.
And right.
Daryl Morey credit, he was the one who jumped on the opportunity, but it was a no-brainer. It's not like he finagled some amazing trade out of nowhere.
It wasn't the Lakers getting Pau Gasol.
Exactly. The Thunder were giving up James Harden. It was widely known that's the case.
Right.
All that being said, what he did this last offseason, he, to me, more than earned his paycheck. But now we're looking at the one hole in the offseason. Nene's older. There's not a second big who can spell Clint Capela and give you 50% of what Clint Capela brings to the team.
This is why I thought that they should have made a play for Nerlens Noel when they had the chance to. Because Nerlens Noel is a similar type of player as Capela, and he could have given you the backup big minutes that you're looking for right now. He can be that shot-blocking presence down low. He can play that pick-and-roll game with James Harden where he catches the lobs and gets the easy layups and easy baskets so well. Guys like that, you need guys like that on the team. A JaVale McGee would have been good to try to bring in here. I mean, there are tons of guys like that around the league that you can bring in to play 10, 15 minutes a night, who can maybe play 20, 24 minutes a night if Capella's hurt, that can come in and give you decent minutes, but you need a backup low post presence on both ends of the floor, and they just don't have that right now.
Yep, and again, it's the one hole in the offseason. The rest of the offseason was an absolute A+. There's no way around it. I don't want people to overreact to what's probably going to be a 5-game losing streak for the Rockets. Could they win tonight? Absolutely. They could win.
Everybody has a shot to win.
James Harden steps on the floor. He gives you a chance to win. He also scored 52 games in a row, and they lost both games to the Clippers and the Lakers. I mean, two teams who will not be playing in May.
It'll be certainly a great moral victory if they pull off the win tonight on the road.
I would agree.
In Boston. Makes them feel like, you know, despite the injury plague that they're going through, there's still some opportunity to make this a really, really good season record-wise, you know?
So here's my analogy for this.
Mm-hmm.
I said after Memorial Day weekend, when the Astros came back down 8-0 to the Twins, and they had that 8-run to 8th inning or 9-run 8th inning and came back with, I said that was the moment they became a championship contender. That was the moment where you look at them and say, when you look back at the season, you say, this is a never give up team. They're never out of it, and they're good enough to beat anybody. Although the Twins weren't a great team, don't get me wrong. That was what it did. A win against Boston and a win against Washington when everybody but James Harden is hurt could give you a similar type of feel that, hey, this team can contend despite how good the Warriors are. Still got to beat the Warriors 4 out of 7. Still got to do it.
Typically, I wouldn't say a game this, you know, early in the season would be a turning point in the team season. But when you go on the road, back-to-back games and beat two quality Eastern Conference opponents.
When you have nobody.
Exactly.
You're going to see a 6-7-man rotation from the Rockets over the next two games.
It's James Harden and the Rockets is what they're going out there with right now. Yeah. Because your next best two players are hurt in Capela and CP3.
I would have never thought I could look at a game in Memorial Day in the baseball season and say, this is a defining moment for a team.
Right.
I would have never thought that, but I did this past year.
I mean, it happens. You have moments like that throughout seasons, and you just figure it out, and you're like, you know what? This is a turning point here for this team. When I saw the two wins that were kind of early in the season that I saw the Rockets were going to have a good season, that game against Golden State and just a couple of weeks ago against San Antonio. Those two games, I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe they are for real this year.
Their next game against the Warriors will tell us more than anything we see in the next two nights. I'm just saying, as far as team chemistry, the who cares how down we are mentality.
Us against the world.
Us against the world.
Yeah.
These next two games could do a lot for building that level of confidence.
I would even go as far as to say, even if they lose these two games but they perform well, it'll still boost their confidence. We'll be right back here on The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Welcome back to The Usual Suspects. We are The Usual Substitutes. Jermaine Every is myself and Mr. Craig Hoskin, along with our awesome producer, Nick Sciarra. That was a good good selection right there, Nick.
Yeah, excellent. We're trying selection. To rotate the top fives, right?
Yeah makes definitely sense. Definitely.
Yeah.
Speaking of top fives, I totally forgot, going back to all the way in the first hour of the show, I forgot one of my favorite Mexican restaurants, just real quick, Berry Hill. They're supposedly the original fish taco of Texas.
I have heard there's a Berry Hill, because I think we live in a similar area, in the Sugar Land, Missouri City area. There's one on 59 that apparently was notorious for their tamales. I've heard since that, I guess they've slipped a little bit. But I think what's cool about that story is how they got started. Like, apparently, the dude was literally named Barry Hill. Mm-hmm. He literally started on a bike, and he was selling his tamales on West Timer. Yep. Like, that's crazy to me. You know, like...
Yeah, that story is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Last segment of the show, and we decided to go in a little bit different direction. Craig came up with the idea, and I'm going to let you lay it out.
Okay, well, it's our last segments for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, they will be having Aggie football on in place of the usual suspects, so...
Yep.
It's Nick's
Belk Bowl.
Jermaine, the Belk Bowl. Nick, Jermaine, myself. It's our last segments of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the Houston Astros, in the sports world, what are you going to remember 2017 for? What is the lasting memory of 2017? You can't say the Astros because it's too easy.
In the sports world or anything? Outside,
I want to do in the sports world, but if you got something that's just so... I mean, also, I would say outside the sports world, there's only two topics someone could say and be legitimate. Either President Donald Trump, one way or the other.
Harvey.
Or Hurricane Harvey. The third would have been sexual harassment or sexual assault.
Those are the top three outside of sports.
Let's leave it at sports. Let's do that. And I'll give you mine first. So, because I came up with the topic. I've obviously been thinking about this. Y'all get a little time. How is 2017 not the year of LeVar Ball?
Truly.
I mean, look. I don't care for him. I don't mind him. I wish media pundits, and I'm kind of being oxymoronic here, I wish they'd stop sticking a microphone in his face, because he never has anything quality to say. He's a soundbite machine, and he has managed to take a company that can barely sell its shoes and keep it relevant the entire year.
Yeah, he's managed to keep himself in the news. No matter which side of the fence you fall on LeVar Ball, whether you love him, hate him, can't stand him, indifferent, either way, he, like you said, he's managed to keep himself relevant, and that to me is impressive all in itself. He's managed to turn one of his sons, that's a quality NBA player, one who will probably never play in the NBA, and the youngest who has a shot, but his dad may kill his shot. He's managed to take his family and make them basically the Kardashians of basketball.
Yep, that's a good.
I mean, if I was gonna throw in one more, like non-sports, isn't this the year of the fidget spinner? They're like all over the place.
I feel like that was a summer fad, or maybe the spring.
Yeah, it got really... And actually, the fidget spinner, actually, I think there was like a variation or like another version of it that was introduced like in the early 80s or 90s or something like that.
Yeah.
But God, they were all over the place.
Man,
all
you know what? I'm glad you said that, because one of my little cousins, she asked me to get her one for an after Christmas gift, and I got to go and find it.
What is an after Christmas gift?
Well, it was already Christmas, and I had to fly back here from New Orleans on Christmas Day because I had to come back to work the next day, and I had to come and do radio with you guys. So she was like, well, since you won't be here for Christmas, can you get me a gift after Christmas? And I was like, she's like six and cute. And I was like, yeah, of course. What do you want?
You gave in.
Man, yeah, you, and
I got sucked into it.
Oh, I will be that way with my nieces and nephews, too, absolutely, at some point in time. But I was thinking, picturing someone older asking for an after. I was like, is after Christmas? I mean, I'm a Jewish kid whose family does do Christmas, because half my family is not Jewish. So I was wondering if after Christmas gifts were something that I just didn't realize.
Nah, it was just a little cute kid asked me a question. Okay. I couldn't tell him no. But I think my top sports moment of 2017, and I'm going to go so troll here, is 28-3 in the Super Bowl.
Yeah?
I mean, and right now, what's really cool about 28-3 and the Falcons and the Saints and the whole rivalry and them blowing it, guess how many points a game the Saints are averaging right now?
I'm going to guess 28.
28.3.
Oh, that's even better.
It's so perfect and harmonic. But that to me, I was so upset when I saw them jump out to that lead. And I'm looking at the Patriots. I'm like, y'all just going to roll over and die? Y'all just going to do this? Really? And it got into the third quarter, and I was just like, this is the end of the dynasty. And I really was thinking that game, more or less than what the Chiefs did to them, I was like, that's it. Because the Falcons have figured it out. They've made them look human. And when the Patriots scored that first touchdown, I was like, uh-oh, here it comes. And
you know,
then the onslaught just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And for that to be the game, the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, the first Super Bowl to go into overtime, the way they won it in such dramatic fashion, pushing the ball over the goal line with that last hurrah, that run, it was really a really great Super Bowl to watch.
I still can't believe Kyle Shanahan doesn't call six run plays, which would have had them win it in regulation. Six. They called four. They needed six, and they win in regulation.
But you know that,
and me, also a really terrible holding call.
That to yeah,
terrible. Yeah. I don't have a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I didn't care if the Patriots won. I'm not a Patriots hater, and I'd have no feelings towards the Falcons one way or the other. Horrible holding call.
That was just about as bad as the one in the Seattle-Pittsburgh Super Bowl.
Yep.
That was about as bad.
About same level.
I mean, to me, that one was worse because there were like three or four of those calls in that Pittsburgh-Seattle Super Bowl, whereas that was that one in the Falcons.
Yeah, but it's one that negated the first down that gives the Falcons the Super Bowl.
Right. And you know you're going to have to play through stuff like that. But to me, leading up to that, like you said, if Kyle Shanahan had called a different series of plays, it would have been so different. I don't know how different the sports landscape would have looked going into this year in the NFL had the Falcons held on and just blown the Patriots out. What would we be thinking of the Patriots right now if that game ended up, let's say, 42-17?
I don't know. The legacies of Belichick and Brady are cemented. I don't know if we look at them much differently other than maybe already predicting their demise versus wondering when it's going to come.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's the only difference that we really talk about.
And that Super Bowl, that comeback, that victory, that gave more credence to the fact that, well, maybe Tom Brady can play till he's 45 or so years old. Maybe Belichick won't be retiring anytime soon. Maybe they can keep this going. And to me, the arrogance of that dynasty, the biggest sign of arrogance of that dynasty was trading Jimmy Garoppolo and not trying to keep him around.
If I'm Bill, though, I'm done. My sports one was the NBA offseason, only because I'm an NBA guy. And when you consider all the, you know, like the it was the year of the NBA offseason, only because it was just crazy. You had, you know, Paul George going to Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. Carmelo going to Oklahoma City.
CP3 coming to the Rockets.
Jimmy Butler leaving Chicago, going to Minnesota for whatever reason. But, like, it's just crazy. That had to have been one of the craziest NBA offseasons ever. Like,
yeah, I will say this. I have another. That's a really good one. It was a crazy offseason. Kind of an underrated one just for me personally because I'm a soccer guy. U.S. failing to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, you know,
that's a huge deal to me.
Huge.
I mean, I'll still watch the World Cup anyway because I'm a soccer nut.
Oh, yeah.
But it's embarrassing.
It really is.
It's just embarrassing.
As one of the countries in the world that has some of the top athletes on this planet, for us not to be able to field not just a consistent World Cup making team, but a consistent World Cup contending team, it pisses me off to no end that we can't figure out how to make our soccer program better in this country. Well, that's it.
That's it.
That's 2017 for the usual suspects.
Two quick days.
I wish we could do it more, but you'll get Barry and Joel back on Tuesday.
Tomorrow, the Belk Bowl.
Tomorrow, you'll get the Belk Bowl.
But if you want to hear more of the usual substitutes, call John Lee. He's the program director here. Call Mr. Gao. Call John Granato. Hell, call Lance Erline.
Letter writing campaigns are very successful.
Hit him on Twitter. Hit us if you need their emails, phone numbers, email addresses, Twitter handles, whatever you want to do. Let them know you want to hear more from us.
Appreciate it.
Well, for Craig, for Nick, for myself, thank y'all for having us for these last couple days. Usual suspects, usual substitutes are out.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.